This show is powered by BL3P, the Lightning-enabled European Bitcoin exchange.
Connect the build.
Nikolai, easy sets. Namibia.
Namibia boasts some of the darkest skies in the world, making it an ideal destination for stargazing and astrophotography. The Namib Rand Natural Reserve is recognized as an international dark sky reserve, offering unparalleled views of the Milky Way and celestial phenomena. Is this your favorite spot to watch Bitcoin rocketing to the moon?
Yes.
Windhoek is the capital and biggest city of Namibia. Windhoek is known for its Independence Avenue, Christuskirche, Tietenpalast, and of course, Windhoek beer. Is this your favorite one to drink?
Yes.
Did you spend sats on goods or services last week?
Yes.
Namibia is a leader in wildlife conservation efforts. For example, Etosha Natural Park is home to a wide variety of wildlife, including elephants, lions, rhinos, and giraffes. While Namibia's northwestern region is known for its desert-adapted elephants and other species. But is it also possible to spot some big bulls, Nikolai?
Yes, actually.
Do you own a Bitcoin tattoo?
No.
Tzu Surf, born as Rafael Resende, is an American rapper from Newark, New Jersey. He gained prominence in the battle rap scene before transitioning into a career as a recording artist. He is praised for his authenticity and ability to convey raw emotions and realities through his lyrics. Is he your favorite rapper now?
No.
Do you prefer Capana over Biltong?
Yes.
Do you think the Boston Celtics will win the NBA championship this year?
No, please no.
Revolver is a 2005 crime thriller film directed by Guy Ritchie. It tells the story of Jake Green, played by Statham, a hotshot gambler who is released from prison after 7 years. Upon his release, he seeks revenge against Dorothy Masha, played by Liotta, a crime boss who had him imprisoned. Do you know two versions of this film have been released? The original version and the second version released to Australia and the other countries containing deleted scenes as well as an altered order of scenes?
No!
Are you Satoshi Nakamoto?
Yes.
Welcome to the Connect the World weekly podcast. I'm Edward.
And I'm Steph. We are ready to take you with us into the beautiful world of the Lightning Network.
Enjoy the ride. This is episode 105 of Connect the World. And this show is made possible by our friends from BL3P and Bringin. Thank you guys for helping us with our mission. And if you also want to help out with our mission, then follow us on Twitter or at YouTube, of course. And you can also ask us anything in our Telegram group, where you can also donate. That's always welcome.
Connect o mundo.
Welcome, Nikolai. Good to have you on the show, man.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing? Thanks for
having
me.
From Namibia. Yeah.
Authenticity, man. That word.
Oh, that was a difficult word,
Authenticity. Authenticity. I need to practice, man.
I was trying not to laugh.
It's like Worcestershire sauce. It's like that one, you know?
Worcestershire sauce. It's so difficult, man.
It's a difficult word.
Hey, what team are you cheering for, Nikolai? Because I asked, do you think the Boston Celtics will in the NBA? I'm not a big basketball fan, but because you are, I digged into the NBA statistics of this season, and I read that they are going to make history by winning 60 or gain 60 points or something. So I mean, they're so far ahead of the other teams.
They really are. So with me, when it comes to sports, I support the team, and I don't change teams. So I've always been a Manchester United supporter, and I've always been a Lakers fan. So whether we're winning or losing, that's my team.
Please don't let them. Hey, but Manchester United had a big win on Liverpool yesterday, right?
I heard so. I stopped watching our games because it just became very depressing. So I still support my teams. I just don't watch my teams.
Yeah. And you know, it's exactly the same for me, man. I'm a big Ajax fan, and Ajax Amsterdam. Yep. And they're so awful this season, man. And it's, you know why? Because our coach went to Manchester United, and he took one of our best players, like Martinez, and also Anthony. Although Anthony, we can have a discussion about him, because in Manchester United, he isn't that good as he was with us. But to be honest, they took one of our best players.
We have some problems, right? There's things that have to happen there. But that's football for you. That's football for you.
And you're a Formula One fan, Steph, right?
Yeah, I like sports. I like sports in general. But to be honest, basketball isn't a real big thing here in Holland.
No, that's right.
They do broadcast it on some TV nets, but it's always at night, obviously. Because of the time difference. It's not like a big sport here.
Ice skating is, right? In the Netherlands, yeah.
But I'm guessing it's not a big deal in Namibia, right, Nikolai?
No, it really isn't, you know. I mean, we don't get that much
bobsleigh.
No.
I can imagine.
Although we do have snowboarding.
Okay,
you can surf on sand dunes. It's actually a thing that happened out here in Namibia.
Sand.
You talk about Langstrand earlier, between Walvis Bay and Swakopmund, that's where a lot of the it happens. Awesome. So you can go do sand.
That's great. Okay, cool. But it's on sand. So I'm a skier. Alpine skiing, and I can't imagine me skiing down the dunes, but I can try one.
you can get like a board. It almost looks like a snowboard. It's almost the exact same way that you strap your feet in, and then you just go down the dune, and you're like, oh my goodness, like the bigger the dune, then you can really go with it, and you can really see how far you can go.
Yeah, crazy, man. Hey, we asked you, did you spend some sats on goods or services last week? And you said yes, obviously.
Of course.
Did you spend it on both, a service? Because I saw you orange peeled your barber, and it was like what was it again? Your barber and another.
Yeah, no, another guy. I've been having talks with a lot of, again, most of the time nowadays, you know, it's a bull run. So in a bull market, everybody's calling me and saying, hey, you know, I saw what Bitcoin's doing. And I'm like, did you buy some or what's going on? So with my barber, most of the conversations I have is based around how to earn Bitcoin and not really how to go buy it. Because I always tell people there's going to be a point in time where nobody will take your fiat for Bitcoin. So learn how to earn it now. So with my barber, dentist, guys I know in logistics, people I know in the tourism industry, I just keep trying to get them to start understanding the aspect where they can for their goods and services. So I bought burgers last week. Saturday, I bought fish and chips and some beer. In Bitcoin.
you're doing a hell of a good job on onboarding. I see, because I think it's Blink, right? They're keeping the statistics, right? How many people you have onboarded or added to the network, right? So you ranked, you did rank a couple of times a bit high. So that's a great achievement, right?
We're trying. The cool thing with Blink and with services like that really start trying to build for customer first is they absorb costs to a certain degree, where it's easier for, you know, when you're talking about people that have a lower fiat equivalency than the US dollar, to then think about Bitcoin in a sense of like, oh, okay, I can actually earn. And then, of course, with the Bitcoin price hitting an all-time high in Namibia, where now one Namibian cent is equivalent to one Satoshi, that also starts a whole new conversation. You know, around
that's,
that.
That's so, way easier to convert than.
Hey, and and I was also thinking to put them on the map, right? BTCmap.org. I see two barbers and no, one barber, one restaurant, the rare Smoky Mare, and the Wolf Shack.
Yeah, the Wolf Shack was the first establishment to accept Bitcoin in Namibia publicly.
Okay.
To publicly say we'll accept it. Smoky Mare was the second one. Then it was that barber. But there is a third place in Walfish Bay, fourth one in Walfish Bay,
where
it's an overland rental company for motorcycles.
Awesome.
So you can rent KVMs from them and in Bitcoin, and you can just go.
Cool.
And you're
tattoo artist, because I saw that you also wanted to orange peel that one. Is it go?
So there's two guys that own the shop. The one is like, yes, we're doing this. I just need you to speak to the number two guy. And number two guy is away, like, I think he's coming back in 2 weeks from the U.S. Okay. He was commissioned to do some artwork that side. So now when he comes back and I'm like, okay, dude, let's sit down, quickly do me a tattoo and let me talk to you for about an hour or whatever it takes
tattoo.
And I'll just orange pull him in that section quickly.
What tattoo will it be then?
I don't really know. I was thinking about the halving formula.
Yeah.
Because it just looks like math, but if you know what it is, you know what it is. So something like that. Or I was looking at maybe all of my nieces' names somewhere on my wrist somewhere. You know, I have a couple of nieces.
How many nieces do you have, Nikolai?
Four from two siblings.
Okay.
My brother has three daughters. My sister has one daughter.
Okay, that so gets that, you enough doable. Time that, for you to orange peel the artist.
cool. Hey, cool, man. Yeah, Nikolai, we would really love to talk to you about the Bitcoin Lightning adoption. And you're also focusing on mining in Namibia. But it has to be in the 21 minutes, man. So if you are ready, we would really love to enter that part.
I'm trying to get through as many of these as we can. Maybe we get the record.
The 21 Minutes is brought to you by Bringin, the app to reliably sell and spend Bitcoin from any wallet. Hey, I heard some story about your journey into Bitcoin, starting with a practical need to officially send money to your brother in Dubai. Can you share something about that moment where you realize, well, Bitcoin it really is a remittance tool?
Yeah, no, that's easy. Yeah, that's a great question. So what really happened was I was sending, you know, it was just before COVID or just as it hit. And I was busy sending him money in Dubai and I got frustrated. Because on our side, every time I want to send money, I need to print out my details, print out his details as a recipient, print out 6 months banking statements, and then take everything. Now, all of that already costs money. Then I need to pay the Western Union fee of sending it. And then, you know, I was like, man, I'm tired of this crap. So I just tweeted it out one day. And the guy that was trying to orange pull me back in 2012, who's becoming full, he just tweeted at me and he was like, bro, I told you Bitcoin. And I was like, you know what? It's cool. Give me a call and then explain to me how this works. And then he was like, look, download this wallet, have your brother download this wallet, send me cash, I'll send you Bitcoin. Or if you want me to send it directly to him, just how do you want to do it? I'm like, no, send it to me. I'll send it to him. And because I want to be able to receive and send. And not even 30 minutes later, my brother had the money. Like, he had the Bitcoin. He went to a broker in Dubai, sold it. And he was like, how did you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to go find out.
Magical internet money, man.
I mean, exactly. This use case.
Like, I didn't know what's going on.
That's crazy. And the Western Union story you're telling, it's crazy that it can be so easy.
Yeah, because do you know what percentage would be lost if you did it the old-fashioned way, so through Western Union? What's the percentage that you would lost? To
for example, sending $1,000 to another person.
That's the weird thing. Western Union fees, you know what it is on the day when you want to send. They'll tell you this is the fee. So you can't even say, okay, I'm going to send it to you in 2 days. It's going to be. You don't know what the fee is going to be. Because the exchange rate that they allow you to buy and sell it is way different than the one at the bank. So now you're there like, okay, I was going to send you 1,000, bro, but the fee today is kind of high. Should I come back tomorrow? Do you need the money right now? Because, you know, all of that becomes, and it also depends on how much you're sending, right? The fee.
And how long does it take?
It's not that long. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes. Basically like a Bitcoin block going through. It's like a confirmation. But of course, it comes with different things, like people watching, you know, Western Union. So it's a security aspect because they know you're either going there with money or you're leaving with money. It's just one of those things. So, you know, there's a lot of those type of things that also come into play when you... But that was the reality of it.
But amazing. This was obviously a real revelation for you. But how did this revelation impact your approach to Bitcoin advocacy in Namibia? Because obviously this is... Is it, for instance, that a lot of Namibian people have to deal with this kind of problems? Or how did the approach triggered the your Bitcoin advocacy in Namibia?
Yeah, well, for me, when I saw firstly how little I paid in an on-chain fee, right? Because again, right, at that time I wasn't cognizant of Lightning, but sending it on-chain and then the fee being so little compared to anything that I've paid for like printing costs and sending and all that, I was like, no. Yeah, I need to figure out what's going on, not just use it. And then that allowed me to be like, okay, how do I get down more information? Where do I find more? What can I run to try and do this practically so that I can get my hands on something too, you know? And the point was to say, if I can solve something as simple as, you know, remittance fees that quickly, what else can this thing do? Like, let's find out what else this thing can do. And then of course, COVID hit. So I had time. We all had time. Yeah. So it was one of those things of, okay, let's really explore it. But that's what it really did for me was open my mind again to like needing to know something.
Yeah. Really trying to understand it. And then
so that I can show people. But
indeed. Podcast. Well, given Namibia's unique socioeconomic landscape, what do you believe will be key drivers for wider Bitcoin adoption in Namibia?
Yeah. Great question. I think truly it's about more work. You know, there's at the end of the day, you need to reach more people, but in a smart way.
I
can't be everywhere at once. So I think one of the things that can help with Bitcoin adoption is educational sessions where people really understand the information they're getting because it's a practical example. It's not just a lecturer standing, pointing at something. It's something where they can digest it and then move on to say, hey, let me go show my cousin or my sister or my brother, thereby becoming the other messengers.
Yeah.
So it's about that taking works. The power away from the messenger and focusing on the message that other people can spread around, and then that can they can all become evangelists as such, I guess.
Yeah, so it's almost like nodes within the Night Network gossiping information to each other and adding new nodes, right? It's like, it's like the same.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. We're just moving around the exact same information. Right, like we would move around the actual time chain of data, and then we'd say, "Hey, well, this is what you need," but it doesn't have to be Nikolai saying it. You know, it can be Steph saying, it can be Edward saying. But it's cool for those people that don't even like Nikolai. You know, forget about wanting to listen to me. I don't like him, but somebody else I like is saying it. That's cool.
It's even better if someone near you is telling the story, how it works.
It's about not centering it around yourself and trying to make yourself the important thing when the message is what matters.
Yeah. And what are the biggest challenges for people who live and work in Namibia, and how can a Bitcoin support in figuring those the solutions out for the people?
Yeah, great questions. You guys really have great questions. So, so in Namibia, we have a couple of things that Bitcoin solves. For one, point of sale machine charges are insanely high in Namibia. I'll give you an example. When the Bank of Namibia came out with a report on all of the banking fees across all 9 banks, everything from interbanks to each other to your own bank accounts, we found out that if you averaged out the cost of all 9 banks in point of sale fees, it came out to something like three Namibian dollars, 80 cents or something like that. I took, at that point in time, I took my last 9 Bitcoin transactions that I did at Smoky Mare, Wolf Shack, and I averaged it out. It was 80 cents, right? So you're already, and that's per transaction for them, the average at ours is 80 cents. You're saving $3 per every time that you spend. right, in Bitcoin as opposed to spending in fiat, just off of point of sale. Now let's go into banking fees for holding your money. Let's go into you sending yourself money. All of those fees that I didn't come up with, the central bank gave us. I'm saying, now look at what Bitcoin does. So all of those, you have to remember, those are the people that are banked. Now we have the people that are unbanked in informal settlements that are also trying to earn. And that's why when I spoke with KG and, you know, he came up with a tweet where he responded to me and created Machankura, it was a way of getting Bitcoin in the hands of people that don't even have smartphones or internet. And that is a big, because again, Namibia is roughly 3 million people, but our landmass is so huge, we're dispersed. People aren't living on top of each other. So you also have to understand the technology is dispersed. Education's dispersed.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not decentralized, it's dispersed. And that is something that we need a lot more of. How can we get a school to get painted that's somewhere in the north that nobody knows about on the internet because those people don't have Twitter? The way we can do that is somebody that's there says, hey, we can get them a Bitcoin wallet. We can put up a whole story on Giza. Let them know what's going on, how much a bucket of paint is going to cost, how much what it, and right now we can get it done. So that how it's about how the tools get utilized and the people get informed on how it can help them economically and socially.
Hey, and in another interview, you told that Bitcoin was initially perceived as a scam by many Namibians due to, of course, early scammers. What was the cause of this narrative and what strategies have proven effective in shifting the public? Or did it just don't remember that time and think about Bitcoin in a different way?
Well, I think there was a couple of things. So Bitcoin was still seen as illegal in Namibia in 2018. And people were trying to create things like exchanges, almost like towards almost like a Binance and whatever for Namibia. But the problem was that they didn't, to my knowledge, they didn't apply for a financial license from the central bank. Or they did get one and it lapsed, something like that. But they continued with operations. Now, what happened is people put down money, right? And were told, look, here are your returns. Look at all the returns. You're going to make so much, what, you know? And then people were like, okay, cool. I want to take some out. Oh, no problem. All you have to do is, you know, just put some more money in so we can pay for the release clause and what. And this became a cycle, right? Of nobody ever getting their money. It's, the thing spiked. So, you know, the fees are different. We have to. So then people were like, this thing is a scam. I'm never getting my money out. What? And then it became a thing of just having a conversation. I always tell people it's a conversation. That's how people, Bitcoin didn't scam you. Bitcoin doesn't know you exist. Like there's no CEO of Bitcoin. What happened was you believed somebody that said, give me your money and I will buy Bitcoin for you. When Bitcoin was created so that you don't have to trust anybody, there's no third party.
Absolutely.
You can buy that directly. And that's what you're supposed to do. So you literally use something that was freedom given to you as a freedom technology in a way that took you back to enslavement, right? And that's
sad. That's where the narrative. It really is.
It is.
Yeah.
But it also says that people like to be led. They don't want to do the research. They're like, you just tell me what. So it's about how we give that information over to people so they don't think it's a cumbersome thing. It's like, no, bro. You know how easy it was when you did what? Okay, now think about it in this way. And there you go. What? That's it. Okay, cool. Now go forth, you know. Don't give them too much info. Yeah. So that's also the thing. It's just the narrative is changing because people are starting to see the usability and the use cases of Bitcoin that are really how it was built, not what somebody told them.
No. Yeah, and you have been on the forefront of promoting Bitcoin adoption in Namibia, and well, this might be one of the significant challenges you have faced in this journey you just elaborated about. But can you elaborate on other significant challenges besides from the people who got scammed and needed to get the trust back?
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be challenges, but I think luckily for us, legislation isn't one of the biggest ones. So the guy that Orange pulled me literally helped the people that were writing the Virtual Assets Act. He helped them understand why Bitcoin, not crypto. What's the difference between that? What is Bitcoin mining? Things like that. So our legislational framework, even though it's against KYC, or it's, you know, you have to KYC, it's AML, terrorist financing, what, At the end of the day, it's a framework that allows for somewhat of innovation and movement. Now, with that in place, you have to remember, as I said before, a lot of people don't want to read. They don't want to go through the rabbit hole. They just want to get the information. So that, of course, is one aspect. But another aspect comes from the social, right? Yeah. You know, Oaken's always talking about Bitcoin. Forget him. Let's talk about, I'm going to show you this Ethereum Solana thing. And I'm like, okay, you guys go pay your school fees over there. I paid my school fees. I was a shitcoiner at one time. So you can go pay your school fees, but don't not learn what is at school. Don't go and sit at the school and not learn what is Ethereum, what is Solana. Why is Oaken only talking about Bitcoin, telling you focus on this, stop playing games with this one? Like, that is a very big one. I mean, I've had people come to the Wolf Shack when I wasn't there and be like, yeah, you guys should accept Ethereum because it's the next Bitcoin. And the owner literally told them, I've been accepting Bitcoin for 3 years. I have absolutely no qualms with it. What can you do for me in Ethereum today that I can't do better with Bitcoin? And they just had no answer because they were just like, there's just an Ethereum thing, you know? And I found that amazing. Because then the owners of the establishment start, because of how they're accepting Bitcoin over time, seeing the message themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's a social thing for the most part, is a problem.
What about artists and content creators in Namibia? Do you also are learnings the opportunities for them to use it?
Yeah, so I don't know. We didn't actually talk about it, but that's one of the biggest ways that I got into Bitcoin was I monetized my podcast, hashtag From the Jump, through Bitcoin, the podcasting 2.0 protocol. And that got me to be the first African podcaster paid in Bitcoin. But when I did that, immediately in my head, I said, how do I show other creatives how to do this? Because we've all been like, I'm a broke artist. And now you're not a broke artist anymore. Let's show other people how not to be. So I'm actually throwing I call them TPOCs, the Pursuit of Knowledge. It's what the sessions are called. I'm throwing one on the 13th of April for creatives all around, musicians, painters, everybody that's in the creative sphere to come through. And actually, the whole session is about how to accept and how to earn Bitcoin. That's it. For now,
great.
Start there and you'll find out how to buy it. Everybody wants to, you'll find out how to buy it. Buying is not the problem. The problem is how do you earn, how do you safely store you, not anybody else for you. And that's what we're going to give them at that one. So we are working on others. Again, they're like any other human being. They see number go up, they start calling, and they're like, hey, what's up? We have something coming. The Bitcoin price is just a bit crazy right now for no reason. And before the halving, so.
Yeah. Well, the price sells itself, obviously. Yeah. So
it makes a great story.
It's obviously earning is a good way of getting in touch with Bitcoin for the first time. But it's also nice to be able to spend, and with the adoption of Bitcoin by some local businesses in Namibia, what changes have you observed in their operations or customer interactions? Are there any success stories or lessons that you learned that you can share?
Well, it's actually quite amazing. I mean, I told them at the beginning, look, we're a tourist destination. There are tourists that come to Namibia that have Bitcoin, bro. They will spend that Bitcoin just to go through the experience of saying, I bought a steak, I bought it, you know? So once they did it, it was also a thing of what I forced upon establishments. Once they said, okay, we'll accept Bitcoin, I was like, I'll only do my meetings from now on at your establishments. So now when I speak to people about Bitcoin at a meeting, that meeting is taking place at their place, they're getting paid. Firstly, whether it's in Bitcoin, fiat, let's say I didn't have Bitcoin that day and I paid them in fiat, whatever. But they're getting paid by somebody that wasn't going to come to the establishment maybe. Also, a secondary person has now come to the establishment who might come back without this meeting being part of the thing because they've been introduced to another place in another form. Like not just, oh, we can go have beers there. No, we can go have beers and burgers and pay in Bitcoin. And those people earn Bitcoin. And why do they take the Bitcoin? That's that first question. Yeah. Why are these guys taking Bitcoin? So that starts a conversation that I don't even have to be around. Like I've had calls from the owners like, hey, so I sent your number to so-and-so because they were asking questions about Bitcoin and I tried my best, but I hit a brick wall. So now those people also, can you send me more resources so I can learn more and I can, when I have these conversations, and that's That's what I've observed is people are educating themselves. It's taken a while. It's been like 4 or 5 years that I've been running at this, okay? But now it's a point in time where people are having conversations that I don't have to be there with, and I hear about it later on. Yeah, there was such a word, and this happened. And that, for me, means that you're starting to grow what could be a circular economy in a totally natural way. Like, you just need to water it every now and then, right? And then the trees grow. And that's what I'm loving, because the sunlight is there. So that's what I really observed about it.
I think that's the strongest power. And people just from within themselves are getting the interest and doing the research themselves instead of you really forcing them to get get the lessons, for instance.
And well, education is of course a vital role in Bitcoin adoption everywhere. How are you engaging with a younger generation in Namibia, and for example, integrating Bitcoin education into formal or informal learning sessions? And just telling a little bit about that, but maybe specifically for that younger generation.
Great question. So funny enough, one of the places Smoky Mirror that accepts Bitcoin, they also do paintball and airsoft and stuff like that. So there's kids that come around there, and I'm like, hey, you guys play PlayStation, right? Yeah, we play PlayStation. I'm like, okay, well, you know, you can pay for your PlayStation vouchers with Bitcoin that you earn playing games on your phone. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, let me show you. All the games on my phone, Snake, Solitaire, all these things, they pay me in Bitcoin. I play this for a month, you know, when I'm waiting in line, when I'm doing what. If I don't use it on mobile airtime, I use it to buy my PlayStation vouchers, and then I buy a game or I play. And that's how I get the engagement with a lot of the younger people is, so what are you busy playing? What are you? And that's why I always say Bitcoin is a conversation. Just talk to somebody and be like, so what are you doing? Did you know you can do that with Bitcoin without touching any of your fiat or asking your parents for money or needing to work 5 jobs? Like, there's certain things that you can do. And that conversation got me started on the thought pattern of how can I get into schools, right? And how can I get in front of like grade 10s, grade 11s? Because they are the ones that are busy exploring. What can I do? Where can I get a job? Waiting tables. Where can I? So they have the drive. They just need the direction and where they need to drive to. And then when you, so what we did was we have approached some schools. They're always, we'll get back to you. We'll see when we have space, when we have. But I have spoken to people from the Chaser Academy, which is a Bitcoin-only focused part of Chaser. And we're going to be running Chaser Academy sessions first 3 weeks of May as well. They'll be free. We're doing it also because we want that engagement from the public to say, hey, guys, look, you don't even have to pay for this education. We're going to give it to you, right? You're going to get certificates saying you completed this. People will know that you actually have this knowledge. And you can go from here and build something for yourself, whether you're selling mobile airtime or but the whole point is just building in the wake of what the youth want, not what I think they want and how they should use it.
I think that's the most important thing, especially when the younger generation, they need they're like free minds, right? So they only need to get the right direction. So, well, I hear the TikTok, and there is something I really wanted to ask you because we're almost running out of time. But I heard you're the chief Bitcoin officer at the Bitcoin mining Namibia. Could you shed some light on the current state of Bitcoin mining in Namibia, and how do you envision its growth, especially considering Namibia's energy resources? And we will hear the gong now, but you can just finish. Take your time on finishing the answer, please, Nikolai.
Okay, no problem. There he goes. Bitcoin mining Namibia was actually a thought experiment. So I did my MBA in China, and when I came back, and I'm now in Bitcoin, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, Bitcoin mining. I wanna mine Bitcoin. Excuse me. So what I did was I contacted the guys that I bought my computers and stuff from when I was in China. And I said, can you guys get me Bitcoin miners? I said, of course, it's China. It's made here. So I bought 3 Avalon miners. I imported them from China all the way to Namibia. And the reason was also to prove what is the process to get miners from China from Beijing or Hong Kong all the way to Namibia, into Windhoek, going through customs. What is the entire process? So once I did that and I had the miners running, because I was like, wait, you don't even need a step-up converter in Namibia. The exact 240 volts that they need, just plug one wall socket, one machine, and start running it, start testing it, start seeing what happens. So after a month of doing that and getting the data, I was like, okay, this is a viable thing that people can do. I will now start bringing in miners for people, whoever wants. And when I started going public with this and like showing videos of me literally mining in my studio here, miner, another miner, you know, then people started like contacting me and were like, hey, Oaken, why are you telling people about, I've been mining since 2016. And I'm like, why are you keeping it a secret, bro? Like, if you've been doing this in Namibia since 2016, you should have told people. So the thing is that there are a lot of people mining, or there are people mining, but nobody knows what the statistics on that are. Because they never say anything. They don't come to events. They just mine, those ones that have miners. Some are still using S9s even. So I have spoken to a good amount of people that are mining and looking to move with me. And again, as you said, we have all these electricity things, green hydrogen. We have all of these things that are coming through. My thing is Namibia as a whole cannot use all of it. Yes, we can sell off some to our neighbors, but why when we can monetize it ourselves, literally by turning it into Bitcoin, right? And then holding that Bitcoin as a country on reserves. I mean, Ethiopia is about to start doing it just now as well. So we have a very unique situation where all of these different aspects, and some of them that people don't think about, like even conventional mining overuses some of the electricity that can then be funneled into Bitcoin miners. It's about how you build that aspect of the industry out. And that's what I really think Namibia stands to gain with Bitcoin mining, is there's such a vastness of this mining industry that people haven't even thought about in the context of the energy that Namibia could provide to make that happen.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Very interesting, Nikolai. We're just going to follow this story, of course, and the work you're doing there. So keep going. Let's head over to the last question, Steph.
Yes.
Connetti il mondo.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, Nikolai, you may choose yourself, man.
Oh, yeah.
So we prepared a question from Patrick van der Meijden. He is from Arnhem Bitcoin Stad, or organizing the Adopting Bitcoin Arnhem in a couple of weeks. Olga Yugolova, she is from RGB, or Michael Fisher, and he is from Opago.
Wow, those are actually awesome choices. Now I don't know.
difficult. You may only choose one, man. It's hard.
Let's go with the lady from RGB.
RGB, the lady. Okay, let's have a look. Yeah.
Hello, Olga Kolova here. My question is, knowing now everything that we know about the Lightning Network, what would you change in its design and architecture, if anything, and how? Thanks. Cheers.
Yeah, Nicola.
Great question.
Yeah.
I have the answer. I would have implemented channel splicing way earlier, just because then you don't have to do this whole closing, reopening, just to be able to get bigger channels, because now, you know, people aren't doing 200,000. Everybody's transactions are like close to 400 and 500. So things like that, I would have implemented way sooner in its architecture, so that everybody could get in at a cheaper fee to open channels that don't have to be. Everybody could basically have one channel open to somebody. And because you can keep splicing in, you could change that channel. That's what I would do with that.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, well, so faster because they're working on it, and there are a lot of possibilities nowadays. But it's
we did an episode with Dusty Demon about splicing, maybe it's good for you to look to see that episode. And
it's a nice episode.
We will send him your greetings, man.
Definitely, man. Splicing is a great thing. Like, oh my god,
I agree with you. Absolutely. I agree with you totally.
Connect the built.
Well, Nikolai, really, thank you for the energy, man.
Yeah,
I really love your story. And as we said in the pre-talk, Namibia looks very, very appealing to me. So
I mean,
maybe sometime
everybody should go.
Yeah, we can.
Everybody should come to it at some point. I mean, as we get more places onboarded, and I'm having more and more convos, you know, you guys will come through here as well, yeah. Like you can in South Africa and say, I can also go to a supermarket in Namibia and buy stuff.
Yeah, sure, sure. And just drive through, as you already mentioned, Anita Posch did. So, interesting, man. And where can people follow you, Nikolai?
I have the same handle everywhere. I'm not on Facebook. Twitter, Instagram, Telegram, they're all Oaken_17. But of course, if you want to follow the work we're doing, that's @EasySets_ at the end for Twitter. And then Instagram is @EasySets. For Bitcoin Mining Namibia, it's just @BTC Mining NAM, NAM. And that's also everywhere the same. I like to keep the standard.
Easy, man.
Well, thanks again. And to everybody else, thanks for listening, and to all members participating in our Satoshi Radio Rings of Fire. And of course, thanks to everyone helping to connect the world with us. If you like our content, then please support us in our mission. Visit our website, connectworld.live, where you can also donate and subscribe, like, and share our content on your favorite platform. So we need you to complete our mission. So keep those nodes running, sats flowing, and rings burning. And go to Namibia, of course. And see you all next week on the same Lightning channel. Aloha, Nikolai.
Nikolai.
Thanks for having me, guys. Cheers.
Thanks.
I'll be there soon.